Currys on the Thursday and said,
can I get one of these printer cartridges? Is that all right? Yeah, we're on. Can I get one of these printer cartridges? And they said, sorry, they're discontinued. I said, oh, right. So you haven't got a replacement? I said, no. So you're telling me I've got to buy a new printer to get a print cartridge? He said, well, yeah, you have. So, great. So I thought, I'll go on the internet and order a couple. And I found a company, and they said they'll deliver on Saturday. And then, obviously, it didn't turn up, so couldn't print out my little talk for today. So I had to bring my computer, and I thought, well, I'll just turn my computer off. And, of course, I never turn my laptop off, so it had to be updated. So it was whirling around. I thought, this is going to be a nightmare. But got through it in the end. So here I am, reading from a computer, which I've never done before, because it's normally from a... So if a computer goes off, we're struggling. Anyway, what we're going to talk about today are the two disciples from Emmaus, on the road to Emmaus. on Friday, we talked about the two robbers, the ones which were crucified either side of Jesus. And today, we're going to talk about two other men who are... It's the only story which is talked about in Luke. It doesn't appear anywhere else in the Gospels. So I think it's a strange story. These two guys, they were moving away from the action. If you remember that everything was centered on Jerusalem. And that's where most of the Gospels talk about their account of what went on. So I was just wondering why these two guys were going to Emmaus. Maybe they wanted to clear their minds. Maybe they wanted to try and assimilate everything that had gone on over the last couple of days. Or maybe they were just running away. So I don't know why Luke specifically recorded this story. And I'm not sure, actually, what was so good about Emmaus. But these two men have been in Jerusalem. They'd probably been with Jesus for some time. And in their own words, he hoped that he was going to redeem Israel. So in their mind, what they thought, they were going to overthrow the Romans. And they were going to have this new kingdom. But it didn't happen. They had seen him killed. They hung around for a couple of days. I'm not quite sure how they felt. Maybe feeling sorry for themselves. But then they heard the tomb was empty. Maybe the pressure of the situation had got to them and they had bottled it. Trying to get away from all the angst and confusion and retribution that was sure to come their way when the authorities found out that the grave had been robbed. It is easy to run away, isn't it? I'm no theologian, and I just sort of think what I read, but I think they've given up, and I think maybe they were going home. All their hopes and aspirations they had placed on Jesus had vanished, just like the body, and they were off. To me, the unanswered question is what had gone on between the early morning garden events, when Mary had run down there, and the time these two decided to move on in the afternoon. I'm not sure. If you remember the story about when Mary went to the tomb and then they went and told the disciples, they were just all sort of confused, weren't they? I mean, Peter and went to have a look at the tomb. But it's a bit shady until we get to the evening when they were all gathered together. So these two guys walking along on the way to Emmaus, and Jesus appears. Well, it was Jesus, but they didn't know who it was. And I was trying to work out why is it these two? To all intents and purposes, they were nobodies. They're mentioned here and not again. I mean, you would have thought that Jesus would have had a million other things to do on this world-changing day. But he took time to meet with two ordinary, downcast believers. And that gives me a bit of comfort in my life. In the great scheme of things, do you know, I'm a nobody. But I'm a nobody in Christ, and therefore somebody to God. And do you know what? So are you. And it's quite interesting, the accounts of Luke, because on Good Friday, Luke was the only one who was talking about the two criminals, the two robbers who were crucified with Jesus. And again, they were the lowest of the low. You know, they were criminals. They deserved to die. But Luke draws out that story, which nobody else did in the other Gospels, and talks about one that missed it and one that got it. And these two guys, we're going to find out what one of their names is, but they're not mentioned in the Bible again. They're just two people. It's just so you just think to yourself, well, what is this random story? But I think it sort of brings out the universality of this, of the Christian message. Anyway, Jesus came along and was walking with them. Maybe it's the culture in Israel to have strangers walking up with you, bearing in mind that he didn't reveal who he was. But, you know, if I was walking into Tewkesbury somebody came up beside me and was listening to my conversation, I'd think that would be odd. I mean, what would you think? It's a bit strange, isn't it? I mean, when you walk downtown, if you've ever tried saying good morning to people you don't know, some people, they say hello, but more often than not, they're sort of head down, look away, do something else, looking on your phone. It's a strange thing. But Jesus gets right to the point, doesn't he? He cuts out all that chit-chat and he just gets straight to it. And he says, in verse 17, he says, well, what are you talking about? What are you discussing? And they must have thought, well, where have you been? He said in verse 19, he said, what things have been going on? Here we get a bit of confessional from the two disciples. They're pouring out their hearts. And it seems to me that these two guys, they were at rock bottom. And when they're at rock bottom, Jesus starts to build that process of building them back up again. I don't advocate total despair for God to work, but it seems on many occasions that's when God begins his work. So these two guys, they said everything that had been going on and just couldn't believe that this person didn't know what had happened. But he sort of reproaches them. He sort of a bit of telling off, I suppose, in a sort of a gentle way. But he sort of says to them, well, you know, there's your reproach. He says, well, where's your lack of faith? Where is it? So what does he do? He sort of he starts to talk about the prophecies of the Old Testament, proving that Christ must suffer before entering his glory. As if he was providing a basis for faith, indicating that Jesus' destiny was preordained. And there was some sort of plan that had been worked through right to this moment. Jesus is attempting to help in their unbelief by pointing out the truth that is actually already being revealed to them. It all be already been written down in the Old Testament. They didn't have the New Testament, which we've got to help us. So they had to look to the Old Testament. It's interesting that Jesus didn't come bounding up to these two guys and say, hi, It's me. It's Jesus. Look, I'm alive. He keeps his identity hidden. He lets the two guys work it out for themselves. And it's great that the Christian faith is built from the Old Testament prophecies and not just some crackpot who decided he wanted to start a religion based on nothing. Well, what sort of Bible study was that? That must have been some sort of Bible study. Not like some of my sermons where you can see the people nodding off with every word I spoke, and I'm looking around to make sure there's nobody sleeping at the moment. Thank you. You're all awake. That's great. No, these disciples wanted more. Jesus was acting as if he wanted to move on. But they said, well, come on in. Yeah, we enjoyed what you're saying so much. You want to hear some more? Come on in. Why don't you just spend a bit of time with us? And he did. So I'm just trying to work out whether that was all part of the plan or not, because Jesus was wanting to move on. But the two guys said, no, come on in with us. So the day was ending. And so at the end of the day, they must have been tired, dirty, I suppose, from walking in the heat. And so what did they do? They wanted to share together. They wanted to spend some time having some food around the table. They shared some bread together. And you just note that it was not the two guys who they broke the bread, but it's actually Jesus who was breaking the bread. And as soon as he did that, their eyes were opened and they recognized Jesus. You know, anybody can debate anything about Jesus, but it isn't until you take what Jesus has to offer that you really understand and see what Jesus is all about. Jesus says, I am the bread of life, and here we see Jesus giving that bread. Taste and see that the Lord is good. It's as though we don't get the fullness of the Christian life until we accept what Christ has to offer and how true that is. And it's interesting that Jesus revealed himself at the dinner table, a place where people are relaxed, calm, and hurried. It's a place of intimacy, and it's a place of friendship. And it's a place where relationships are strengthened. And is that the sort of evangelism that works best? Rooted in relationships, person to person. Well, verse 32 is great, isn't it? Didn't our hearts burn inside us as we walked and talked with Jesus? Burning. What a great position to be in. When was the last time our hearts burned when we thought about Jesus? Oh, to feel like that all the time. Well, what happened next? They were transformed. The two were off. Even though it was late and it was dark, they were going back to Jerusalem to tell the others about what they'd heard and seen. They were energized, renewed, focused. Dare I say it? Born again. Well, what's the point of this story? Well, I think there's a number of things. Firstly, they were running away, but they were brought back by Jesus. Secondly, they were nobodies. They were not kings, they were not apostles, they weren't rich, they weren't Jews. Doesn't this story point to the universality of the gospel? It's for all, not for the few. And finally, to find out the future, We need to look at the past. And the truths of salvation that are contained in the Bible. We don't know what happened to these guys afterwards. We don't know what happened to the two guys, or the two robbers. We know that one confessed. But these two guys are not mentioned again in the Bible. But I don't think that their lives were ever the same again. Their empty, disillusioned lives had been transformed by the grace of God. And yours can too.